Parshas Kisitsa is a jam-packed parsha in terms of content, in terms of just the theological weight, in terms of drama, in terms of just about everything that can make a parsha intense. I think, you know, we don't rank a parshias against each other, but I think in terms of theological content and in terms of episodes affecting Klal Yisrael, Kisitsa is clearly way, way up there. And one could spend a lifetime talking about Kisitsa. It's really, really a very intense parsha. And this last Aliyah is, I guess, representative of what we have seen with some other parshas. So this Aliyah perhaps you wouldn't get to because you'd be talking about the Chet Egel and Yigam Midos and so many other things that are in this parsha. But there are very, very important things that are in this Aliyah, including really this first pasuk, which I'll just talk about a little bit because it's very significant to our religion as a whole, and it is very synergistic as well as timely, because it has a very strong term reference. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, k'sav lecha es hadvarim ha'ele." To write down these words, Ki al pi advarim ha'ile karati itcha bris v'yes Yisrael. So Moshe is told by God to write down these words. What are these words? So the Rishonim debate what these words are. Is this a restating of what was already given? The Ramban writes that God wrote down the Asaras HaDibros and Moshe is told to write the rest, and that this represents the conditions of the Mechila, the fact that they're being forgiven for the Echei To'egel. The Sfarno understands differently that it does mean the Dibros. The Netziv understands that it's a reference to a written bris that the Jews are going to sign on to. So there are many opinions as to what exactly is the content of this pasuk, is the content of this bris. But the Gemara tells us that there is a reference here to Torah Shebaal Peh. And that the phrase ki al pi hadvarim ha'ila, what is that supposed to mean? That means that which is transmitted bal peh. And there we find in this pasuk the reference to the krisas bris. So the Gemara says in Masech Zegitin and the Samach Beis, where the Gemara is one of the main discussions there. There's one of the main discussions about the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav and the relationship to each other. And the Gemara there has the discussion about whether the Torah is Rubo Shebaal Peh or Rubo Bichtav. And the Gemara also states that Lo Nichrusa Brisli Yisrael Ela Mishum Dvarim Shebaal Peh, that because of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that was the main covenant with the Jewish people. Rav Shechter Shlita, his Sefer Divrei Sofrim, is essentially all about this. It's still available in some beta versions. God willing, be available in a more expanded version. But this is how the book starts. This is essentially the theme, the fact that Torah Shebaal Peh is Krisas HaBris with the Jewish people. And that's what this pasuk is understood to convey. Now, this is also highly significant for Purim, as we've spoken about many times. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss in a little bit of a different vein tomorrow on Purim itself. But we know that the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos tells us that Purim is a time of Kabbalah HaTorah, that the Jews were not as enthusiastic as we like to believe when the Torah was given at Har Sinai, and that even though we said Nasa V'Nishma, but the Gemara there also says that we had to be compelled, Kofale Amhar Ki Gigas, the mountain was held on top of us, and we were forced to accept the Torah. And the Rishonim asked that there's a blatant stira. I mean, the stira is right there on that daf, in Shabbos and Daf Peches, because the Gemara both talks about the great credit we get for Nasa V'Nishma, and also talks about us having to be compelled to receive the Torah. So to that, Rishonim have different approaches. But there is a Medrash Tanchuma that many quote, that the difference is between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. That Torah Shebichsav, we said, fine, we'll take it, no problem. But Torah Shebaal Peh, we were not so ready to take. It was too burdensome. There were too many details. There were too many chumras. We weren't interested. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, sorry, it's a package deal. It's all or nothing. So therefore, the Torah Shabbat Peh is what we accepted on Purim, according to that explanation. So Purim is the time of the willing acceptance of the Torah Shabbat Peh. So there's a very strong relevance of this pasuk to Purim. And also the fact that Purim as a Yotif Drabanan was also very representative of Torah Shabbat Peh, but perhaps even more so in the fact that it is the Yontif of the acceptance of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, the actual Nesina of this second Luchos, as we know also, was Yom Kippur. So perhaps there is some explanation here, some connection to the idea that the Vilna Gaon made famous of Purim is Yom Kippurim, the relationship, the connection between Purim and Yom Kippur. So this is a big part of it, that Yom Kippur is the day when the second Luchos were given, and the Torah Shabbat Peh that is referenced here in this pasuk was actually accepted willingly on Purim. So Purim and Yom Kippur really make one big unit together, and that's how some understand this relationship, this notion of Purim Kippurim. I mentioned the Gra. If you look through Rav Huttner's writing in Pachad Yitzchak, you'll find many discussions of this, and some suggest that together they make one complete Yontif. That the Gemara tells us that the theme of Yontif is Chetzi Lachem v'Chetzi Lashem, that part of it is Unashul and Davening, and part of it is the Gashmias recognition of Simcha through Suda and the like. So Purim and Yom Kippur together make one whole, that Purim seems to be Kul Lachem, and Yom Kippur seems to be Kul Lashem, so together they create one Yontif. So they are linked also by this, by the importance of the Torah Shabbat Peh that is being emphasized here. Shimshon Pinkus, in his Sichos, so he suggests that a covenant is performed when somebody gives another something that's very valuable to him, and therefore he's basically saying, I won't forget you because you have what's most important to me, so that means now you're important to me. So that's the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us the Torah Shabbat Peh, so to speak, as a representation of the Bris, and vice versa. So he suggests that's also Pshat, the famous Chazal, which always is open to a lot of questions, and this may address it a little bit, that we know that Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went from one nation to the next, and he said, will you accept the Torah? Will you accept the Torah? And they said, what's in it? And they all got different answers. Lo Sirtzach, Lo Sinaf, Lo Sachmor, etc., etc. And they said, we're not going to take it. So you could ask that it doesn't really seem fair, that it seems like they were all hit at their weakest points. So why is it they were getting different answers? So he explains that that's, again, the nature of a bris, that God is saying, okay, I want you to be able to sacrifice, so to speak, that which is most a part of your identity, and they weren't willing. And the Jews said, Nasa v'nishma. So Nasa v'nishma is their essence, is your free will, is your actual identity. So to give that over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was the corresponding bris. There is also a limud from here, which is a complex topic, but just to say a little bit about it, the Gemara also understands from this pasuk that Dvarim Shevichsav Yefshel Omer Balpeh V'Dvarim Shebalpeh Yefshel L'Kosman, that when it comes to the Oral Torah has to be kept oral, not biksiva, and the Written Torah has to be learned biksiva, has to be done biksiva. So there is a big discussion as to what exactly this means. Rishonim, Tosis and Tzmura, others talk about this topic. What exactly is it telling us? Some suggest that it refers to only when it's being done in an official capacity. So when you need to be Yotzei a mitzvah, for example, something like that, so then it has to be Mitoch HaKsav. That's a discussion if that's what it means. It also seems, this is again something Rashefta talks about in the Sefer, it also seems to refer to the format of the giving over. That the giving over has to be in each proper format. So the ksiva has to be given over b'ksav, and the oral Torah has to be given over Baal Peh. Now we know that the Gemara says that there was a compromise that had to take place because we were at risk of Chalila forgetting the Torah. So Gemara says, Yislasos Lashem, Yifaros Sarasacha, that there is a need to act expeditiously for Kadosh Baruch Hu, because the Torah is on the verge of being negated. So the Torah was written down. And there is, again, a discussion. So does that mean that this pasuk, this has implications for other things also? Because this notion that there's a crisis decision, Eis Lassos Lashem, that we have to take action because things are urgent. So does that allow us to suspend Yisurim, or does that just allow different types of attitudes? So part of that discussion is the writing down of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Was that an actual Isser, or was that something else? Was that something less than an Isser, or is that an ideal form of presentation, but if it's going to come at the cost of forgetting the Torah, so then it can't be? So that's a whole discussion, because again, it's relevant not just for this local issue, but also just for knowing what are the parameters of Eis Lassos Lashem. So that's a big discussion itself. There is a lot to say about this. There are those who have taken different attitudes, l'halacha, about this notion of writing down the Torah. I think Moshe Sternbuch, if I remember correctly, has a lot about this in his introduction to the Sefer. Others have as well. Because I think Moshe Feinstein as well has a discussion about this, because it's a topic that's relevant to the writing down of any Sefer. Do we assume that nowadays, okay, the whole thing is het de gomer, so we write down whatever we want? Or is it essentially that when it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh, the only het to write was because of a fear that you would come to forget the Torah, but if you were confident you're not going to forget the Torah, so then that's not going to be permitted. So this is, I think, Rabbi Warman has a discussion about this in his introduction, as you can see why it's a big introduction topic. The Chassam Sofer, who wrote many Sfarim, when he was a student of Rav Nosson Adler. And Rav Nosson Adler, we have no Sfarim from him, as far as I'm aware of, partially because, or I guess completely because, he had the attitude that he didn't really have a heter to write down his Torah. So the way it's related is that he had in his shas at home, he put dots wherever he had tradition, because he was confident that the dot would be enough to remind him. I don't know what that's going to do for us future generations, but whatever he didn't feel he had a heter to write down his Torah. Now, the Chassam Sofer, who discusses this and who quotes from his Rebbe all the time, from Rav Nosson Adler, but he clearly, in practice, took on a different attitude, because we have extensive writings from the Chassam Sofer, Baruch Hashem. We have a lot to read from him, but this is a whole back and forth about what exactly is the nature of this Isser of writing down Torah Shebaal Peh. So to give us a little synergy and a little chazara, so I saw a fascinating discussion in the Sefer recently, which relates to something we spoke about earlier in the year, and relates to this, that we discussed earlier in the year about why we have to say Safek Derabanan Lakula. Why is it that if it's really the case that all the Dinim Derabanan emerge from the Pasuk of Los Asur, so then the Ramban writes that that should make it all a Dinim HaTorah, and what right do we have to ever be Makel? So we mentioned one possibility that many of the Mefarshim have, that we have to be Makel because we have to build in a different system, the Dinim Derabanan, because otherwise we would be at risk of violating Baal Tosef. Right? You recall this? So that's based on the Rambam himself. The Rambam Hilchos Ma'amrim seems to understand that what saves the institutions that are Derabanan from violating Baal Tosef is the fact that we have these hints, we have these flags that identify them as Drabbanan. So essentially what he seems to be saying is that if Chazal were not to make it clear, if they were to blur the distinction between a Deraisa and a Drabbanan, that would be a violation of Baal Tosef. And the Ravid disagreed. The Ravid said he doesn't think that's true at all. That's not what Baal Tosef is. So the Or Sameach, I don't remember if we discussed this, but Or Sameach has a statement there that he thinks the Ravid has to be right. He thinks there's a very big question on the Rambam, because if the Rambam is right, at any time it's not clear whether something's derais or drabanan, we're in violation of Baal Tosef, we're in trouble. Now, I mentioned, I think at the time, that it's interesting just to consider how well we're doing on this plan, since there's so much Lysa nowadays that is subject to machlokas, whether it's a derais or drabanan. But the Or Sameach says more than that. He says that very often you'll have a Mishnah. A Mishnah will tell you a din and will tell you a pasuk. And then the Gemara will say, what? But that din's only drabanan. And then the conclusion will be, yeah, it's asmachta zubalm, it's not really derais, it's drabanan. So ask the Or Sameach. So the Tanoim were all in violation of Baal Tosef until the Amoraim came around hundreds of years later and explained that it's really an asmachta. So for all those centuries, it was a violation of Baal Tosef. Right? You hear the question? And he's basically saying that if we're not allowed to blur the distinction between deraisas and drabanans, so how do we have it that we open up our Gemara? The Mishnah will say, here's a din, it sounds like it's deraisa. And the Gemara will say, but it doesn't seem like it's deraisa, it seems like it's drabanan. And we'll conclude, asmachta ba'alma, that it is drabanan. So there's a few hundred years between the Mishnah and the Gemara. So you're saying that for centuries, the Tanoim presented it as if it was a deraisa. It was only when the Amoraim came along and clarified it that they saved us from Baal Tosef, according to the Rambam. So I saw a very fascinating discussion in a Sefer recently that brought the various proofs and supports to the idea that the way we have things written down in the Mishnayos are not necessarily the way the Tanoim taught the Dinim. And that the Mishnayos are also written in a vague way, just to be minimal, that whatever that was necessary to keep things from being forgotten was written down, but a lot of the actual transmission remained Baal Peh. That was the point. So that was how we held on to the concept of Torah Baal Peh even after the Mishnayos were written down. There continues to be a crucial part Baal Peh, and therefore we shouldn't assume that the language of the Mishnayos represents the totality of what the Tanoim were saying when they conveyed this point. So it's a very fascinating idea, a little bit of synergy, and it's a very important concept. Just very quickly go through the other psukim, not leaving much time for the rest. So the psukim continue. Vahisham Hashem Arba Yom Arba Laila Lechem Bo Ochel Mayim Lo Shasa V'Yichtav Aluchos Eistir Habris Saras Hadvar. So Moshe was up with God for 40 days and 40 nights. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a discussion, and Rav Gifter has a discussion that why do we need another 40 days? He was there 40 days the first time, and it's the same Torah, right? So why does he need another 40 days for the same Torah? So they both say something of similar nature, that the recipients are now fundamentally different. Before the Chet and after the Chet, they're on a different level. So the Torah that's being taught has to be prepared for a different type of student, a different type of recipient. So therefore Moshe had to go back again and learn it more deeply in order to be able to communicate it to a class, so to speak, that was on a very different level. So the Hebrew read this Moshe Mehar Sinai, Shneluch HaSaidus, Be'ad Moshe Beruta Menahar, Moshe Le'yadol, Ki Karan Or Ponav B'dabro Yito. So Moshe is coming down from Har Sinai with the two luchos in his hand as he came down, and Moshe didn't know that there was a ray of light that was shining out of his face. So of course, this is where one of the famous anti-Semitic or something Semitic misconceptions come from, which Michelangelo perpetuated. It's a belief that Jews have horns, because Karen is a horn, but it means here a ray of light. So the idea that Moshe had horns is one that you see represented in Michelangelo's sculpture of him, famously. And many people have reported that in various parts of even the United States, where Jews are not very commonly found, that there tend to be people who believe, Adi Yom Hazeh, that Jews have horns because of this pasuk. So just so you get a clue of how easy it is to misread the pasuk. So in any event, there is a discussion as well about where the light comes from. So just to say quickly, the Midrashim give different answers of what was the source of this light. And some Midrashim says there was extra ink that was left over in Moshe's pen, and that was used for this light. The Laharish Nasa, among many others, have comments about this, that this represents also the Torah Sheba Peh, the Torah that was held back, that it was internalized. So that is the source of the light of the soul. And he also comments in another Medrash, there's a Medrash that says that the bottom two tefachim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu held on to, or the, however you see it, bottom and top, the other side, the two tefachim Moshe held on to, and the middle tefachim, so that's where the light came from. So he understands that the tefachim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is holding on, that refers to the absolute ruchnius that Moshe was holding on to, that refers to the gashmius of this world where the halacha is applied, and the middle represents the merger of the two. So that's where the light actually comes from, bringing them into each other. There is an interesting nekuda in the Sefer Otzal Shlomo. He points out the Beredes Moshe Menahar, and Rashi emphasizes that it was in Kippur here. So he says, why does Rashi emphasize that, and why does it sound specifically like he was going down from the mountain when he was holding this? Because since it was Yom Kippur, so he couldn't carry. So because he was receiving this as he was walking, so there was no akira, there was no actual action of picking it up, and therefore it wasn't an act of carrying. Okay. In any event, just to quickly look at a little bit more here, you have to daven mencha. Vayikra aleha Moshe v'yashuv elav Aaron v'chanasiyim bo'eda v'daven Moshe aleihem v'achreichin nikshu kol bnei Yisrael v'yitzavim eskola shere diber Hashem ito v'har Sinai. So the Gemara in Eruvin emphasizes that what's going on here is that Moshe is essentially relating the Torah four times, first to Aaron, and then to his sons, and then to the Zekanim, and then to the Jewish people. And Rav Schwab has a whole discussion that the four times represent the four different levels of the Torah, Pshat, Remez, Drash, Yesod, and how each one needs to be brought down to the next level. And he suggests that's also Pshat, that we have a theme of four in many ideas of learning, including Shnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum, because we have the two mikras, the Targum and the reading in Shul, together it makes a four-stage Talmud Torah, also to represent this. Okay, so V'chal Moshe Medaber Itam V'Itam Alpanav Mazveh. So Moshe finished speaking to him, and he put a veil on. V'vo Moshe Lefnei Hashem V'Daber Itam Yasser Esa Masveh Zeseh V'Yatza V'Diber El B'nei Yisrael Esa Asher Yitzuveh. So Moshe put this veil on, he took it off to speak to God, but it also sounds like he spoke to the Jewish people without it. The masvel was what made them able to tolerate him. But considering the intensity of this light, but he only put it on after he was speaking to them. So here, there's a comment that Rav Moshe Feinstein has also, and others also make a similar point, that when you're actually teaching the Torah, so you have to be able to see the students, you have to be able to communicate directly face to face. It could raise questions, you know, as much as our beautiful technology allows so much learning over the podcasts and over online, but it's still a crucial aspect of being able to see each other. Rav Moshe understood that that was a part of the message that was being represented here, that even though there was a need for Moshe to cover his face, but at the time of the actual transmission of the Torah, it was still face-to-face, it was still exposed. Okay, so there are major themes here, but we covered some of the highlights. I guess, pun intended, no pun intended, but you know, again, I look very forward to seeing you all in about 22 hours. And
I'll see you all tonight. See you all tonight, everyone. Mm-hmm.